have in studio now the newly appointed, not yet. Okay,
right.
So you're not
July,
the president.
July 1st, I'll be the president.
Okay, well, that's a ways from now. I didn't realize it was that long. Why so long?
It's a long ramp. It's true, but it's okay. So I can close out all the work that needs to be done coming out of the provost office, and we can line up new leadership in the areas that need it, and it gives the outgoing president Tom Hibbs some time to build a new center that he's hoping to establish at the University of Dallas that focuses on issues of Catholicism and ethics and culture.
Yeah. I've been asked a number of times because people know of your association with the station. Hey, what do you think about this Dr. Sanford? And I will tell you the same thing I tell them. I said, he's real easy to work with. He's a gentleman. He's intelligent. He's great. So
well,
they picked a good guy. I kind of wish I had gotten the job, but you know, you were my second pick.
Well, we'll keep you in mind next time around. Okay. But you know, just a couple of thoughts on that. So I think you know, but it's not broadly known that I was a finalist the last time the University of Dallas had a presidential search, and that was just a year and a half ago or 2 years when all of that came to a conclusion, and that certainly was a big part of the board's consideration when they were looking at this, because it would have taken a lot of time, effort, and funds to go through another national search, and they were quite convinced that they would come up with the same result. They really wanted me to be the president. And that has to do with work I've been doing at the University of Dallas, as well as where I hope to take us over a very long period of time. So my intention is to be in this role for, if they'll have me, and God willing, the rest of my career.
For decades.
I think.
But you're a young guy. Yeah.
Relatively young. I don't feel young, every morning when I wake up.
None of us do. I don't think Cicel does.
I do have a granddaughter and a son who's almost 25. But no, I'm definitely on the younger side.
Yeah.
And there's
an
advantage to that because it takes a while to really establish the kind of relationships that can be so vitally important to a university's standing. And UD, as you know, is still relatively young. We're sort of, from an institutional point of view, it's as though we're coming into our adulthood now and the productive years of our adulthood. So I'm just absolutely thrilled that the board has asked me to take on this role of leading us into the future.
Well, congratulations. I knew a lot of people were thinking that you might be the last time, and of course they made the pick with Dr. Hibbs, and now here you are on July 1st becoming the new president. Now the big question everybody wants to know: are you going to continue to be able to do these segments with us?
Well, let me see what the new schedule looks like. But actually, I mean this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity to keep our local Catholic community aware of what's happening at the University of Dallas. So I can certainly see a number of reasons to continue to be engaged in this radio show.
I think
show.
That was a yes, wasn't it, Cicel? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It was a lawyerly yes.
I mean, we had to record it now.
You kind of hedged a little bit, but I think it was what I heard was yes. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Well, God's will be done, and if there's somebody else that needs to do it in your place, fine. And I know you've got a guest, Dr. Lehman. We want to get to him. One other question. What's the overall role of a president? Will you still have any classroom time? Now you're provost.
Right.
What's the role of a president primarily?
Yeah. So you know, as provost, I'm over more than a typical provost already. And so you know, the president speaking organizationally is sort of like the CEO of the university, although that's a corporate model and not entirely appropriate to the presidential role. But it will be my job to oversee every facet of what happens within the university, as well as all of our external relations. And so it will be moving up to a higher level, so to speak. I won't be in the weeds in the same way I am right now with everything that's happening within the academic realm of the university, student life, athletics. I will be taking, I'm right now over campus ministry, and the chaplain's office. I will continue to be so, as a lay president of a Catholic university. I think it's really important to have a tight relationship with the chaplain's office. We have an outstanding chaplain, Father Thomas Moore Barba, and a really dynamic campus ministry office. We've got focused missionaries on campus, and I want to continue to see, vibrancy in that area and work closely. So I will be more outward facing I've been very inward facing in the role of the provost. I still will need to have one eye, so to speak, on the internal operations. But one of the things I've done over the last year is develop a new strategic plan for the University of Dallas, working with all of our constituents. And we're going to be rolling that out. And it's a plan that hits upon the fundamental features of who we are. It's a reaffirmation of our mission as a Catholic and liberal arts university. And it's an opportunity to really emphasize ways in which we can be of greater service to church and country and build up the character, intellectual, moral, and spiritual of our students. So I'm eager to get started with that work.
All right. So you got about 5.5 months or so until you start. So plenty
That's
of time
right.
to ramp it up. And I'd love to, you know, in between now and then, just sit down with you and do a longer interview as we get into the summer and just talk about, you know, what the plans are.
Great.
But we can schedule that going forward. But
look forward to that.
All right. Well, thank you again. Congratulations to Dr. Jonathan Sanford. He is the he will be the president as of July 1st. He's been appointed by the school board of directors, I guess, as the new president. So congratulations to him and also to Dr. Hibbs, who has taken on a new role at the university as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Dr. Lehman's your guest today. We'll get him. He's been patiently waiting on the phone, so he's with us now.
Hello. Yes, indeed.
Hello, Dr. Lehman. I'm sorry for the long delay there.
No problem at all.
So thanks so much for joining us today. As everyone heard Dave say, Dr. Lehman is he's the graduate director of our MA program in classical education. He is involved in many other facets of the work of classical education. He's a professor of humanities, and he has a PhD in philosophy from the University of Dallas. But Dr. Lehman, I thought one way to begin is maybe to have you reflect a little bit on how you found your way into this field we now call classical education, and what do we mean by it? What's the understanding of classical education that you'd like to have our listeners be particularly attentive to?
Certainly, yes. Well, maybe it might help just to begin with a general account of classical education. The term is quite common today. It's used throughout the United States and internationally to name an education that historically usually went by the name of liberal education.
Right.
So when I talk to folks about classical education, I like to point out the continuities in that long-standing tradition of liberal education. So I don't want to quibble about terms and say we ought not to be using the term classical. That's fine and well and good. But to also be aware that there's this tradition that goes right on back to the pre-Socratics.
As a fellow philosopher, I'm quite all right with quibbling about terms. It's what we do. And I too prefer this term liberal education, although that too is sometimes people misunderstand that. And I like your phrase right. arts of liberty as a way to express what's really at the root of liberal education. But anyways, I interrupted you, sorry.
Yes, no. Well, just to build off of that, a liberal education, according to its etymology, is an education for a free person. In various ways, that education is meant to bring about freedom for each individual, for each person who is trained in it.
Uh-huh.
And that will include the perfection of their nature. So a great deal of emphasis is placed upon the formation of intellectual virtues and moral virtues. And that often comes about through a very careful reading and study of some of the great books throughout the Western tradition, starting back with the Jewish and Christian tradition, with sacred scripture, of course, but also incorporating the Greco-Roman tradition, and then the various reflections upon the human person, upon the cosmos, and on God that have happened since those remote origins. So it's delightfully open and interdisciplinary, and it's a kind of education that puts a tremendous premium on the perfection of our nature as human beings.
That's great. So I think you and I would both agree that this kind of emphasis is really at the source of what we mean when we talk about education at the University of Dallas, both as a liberal arts university and perhaps even more significantly as a Catholic university. Would you mind focusing a little bit on that second?
Oh, I would be happy to. I would be happy to. In fact, this relates to the other question you asked, which pertained to how I got into classical education and what brought me to UD. And as has already been mentioned, I did graduate work at UD a few years ago, let's just say. I did a master's degree and my PhD in philosophy here. And at the time, I was not a Catholic. I was a very committed Protestant and, read the Bible avidly and so forth. It was at the University of Dallas that I first came in contact with the depth and the breadth and the richness of the tradition that we're talking about, one that is informed by the teachings of the Church, that is not afraid of secular learning, that places readings from Plato and Aristotle alongside sacred scripture and the Church Fathers and so forth. And my studies as a graduate student at UD really opened my eyes to this beautiful tradition and led in time to my conversion to the Catholic faith. So, I identify the University of Dallas in a particular way, personally, with my own growth and understanding of the liberal arts and liberal education and all that a Catholic liberal education is supposed to be.
That's wonderful. So, one of the things that you're involved in very intimately is oversight of the MA in classical education. What we're trying to do there is to educate educators who are oftentimes at Catholic K-12 schools. Sometimes they aren't. But what do you see as the principal aims of that MA program? Why are we putting such an emphasis on it, and what do we hope to see as the fruit of that work down the road, say 20 years from now?
Certainly. Yeah, excellent question. Well, unlike other contemporary forms of education, which can tend to think of education as a sort of information transfer, or all you need to do is get these content points in the student's mind, and then we can tick off a few boxes, and then we can consider that person educated in that area. That this tradition says yes, there is a content to be sure, but it goes much deeper than that, and it has to do with the intellectual and moral formation of the student. Mm-hmm. Because, again, as I mentioned earlier, we want to perfect them as persons, right? Now, of course, God does the ultimate perfection, to be sure, but there is effort required on our part, and education is one aspect, one way in which we can be involved in that. So why such an emphasis on teachers and administrators? Well, because in order to receive that kind of formation, our teachers, our headmasters and so forth, they must have received it themselves so that they have it to give. And what we've found in the classical education movement is an explosion of interest, of curiosity, of desire for classical education. In fact, such a great interest that we can't keep teachers and administrators who are well-formed before the students fast enough. So one of the things we're in the process of doing is providing that very formation for teachers, for administrators. In some cases, they never received liberal education themselves. In other cases, they're coming back to shore up either perceived inadequacies or limitations to their former education, and to make them ready to go out and really deliver this education of the whole human person.
That's wonderful. How does this how does this work out with respect to the kind of education they are receiving within that program? Because I hear you say on the one hand that we're preparing these teachers and administrators to be able to deliver pedagogically the kind of education that we call a liberal education or classical education, but we're also trying to give them that education. So how do you find the right balance between the content-rich approach where there's close reading, careful Socratic engagement, writing with the sort of pedagogical emphases that are part and parcel to the work of a teacher and an administrator at
certainly
a K-12 school?
Yeah. Well, we try to keep all of those concerns in mind in terms of the coursework that we require of our students. And so, for instance, every student, as part of the core of the program, goes through a sequence involving the trivium and the quadrivium, the seven liberal arts, grammar, logic, rhetoric being the trivium, and arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy as the quadrivium. And that was perceived historically to be the basis of the liberal education. So that's a kind of groundwork. And then from there, what they're able to do really is, in addition to receiving content, reading the texts, and so forth, we also have a series of courses that are more pedagogical in their orientation. Mm-hmm. And as much as we can, we try to incorporate both in the same class. So mm-hmm. So let me give you an example. There's a course called Plato and Socratic Conversation. Mm-hmm. So in that course, we read dialogues of Plato, and then after that, we look at philosophical dialogues from later in the tradition. So we're indeed reading those books, yes. But the entire course is administered or facilitated as a Socratic conversation. Mm-hmm. So this gives these teachers and administrators practice and a good deal of confidence in not only understanding that tradition of teaching and learning, mm-hmm. But also of being effective leaders of Socratic conversation. And that's one instance, but we could provide others.
That's very helpful. So one of the things that has been quite remarkable in the last couple of years, at least to me, is the way in which a number of schools, many of them Catholic, have reached out to us, have reached out to some other organizations within the classical education movement, and have asked for help transforming their school to a classical model. And what do you think is the fundamental inspiration there, particularly for a Catholic school that sees itself as not yet providing a classical education? And they want one. What is it that they want and see in this approach? And coming back again to that question of the way in which this is a deeply Catholic education.
Yes, yes. So, well, for one thing, throughout the 20th century, for a variety of reasons, what was Catholic education in the United States became more and more like other forms of education. There was always a Catholic component, to be sure. There was always some kind of a religion and or theology requirement. But in terms of the distinctiveness of the curriculum, it over decades grew to be less and less. Mm-hmm. And there became more of a distance from the church's own educational traditions. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 decades is a return. So at the same time that they're seeking to be more genuinely Catholic in terms of the education they deliver, they're realizing that historically what that has meant is that the church has been at the forefront of providing and speaking on behalf of the liberal arts and liberal education. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of both and instead of either or, right? So you have this deep, rich tradition that the church has participated in, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go downstairs, if you will, in St. Peter's and you look at the plaques that are beside the different popes, in one after another, you see that he was a great proponent of the liberal arts or a great defender of liberal education. And it gives you this really palpable sense of the church's commitment throughout the centuries to this kind of education, and in doing so, in no way compromising their Catholicity. In fact, in a certain way, enhancing it precisely by this deep and thoughtful integration of the Catholic faith with all sorts of learning.
Right, right. Well, that's a great point. And I always go back to St. Augustine, you know, in many respects our most significant theologian, most significant thinker in the church. And I'm saying that as a Thomist who, recognizes that, St. Thomas would not be St. Thomas without St. Augustine. And right. what was St. Augustine's profession? He was a teacher of, the liberal arts and a really gifted one and highly recognized. And he did not see a fundamental conflict between the growing Catholic tradition and the Bible as the Word of God and integration with the liberal arts tradition, which set us on a course that continues to nourish our Catholic culture.
Yes, agreed. And just to pick up on what you were saying there about St. Augustine, among the very earliest of extant writings that we have from him are the so-called Kosciuszko dialogues, and they're called Kosciuszko dialogues because of the place where Augustine and his mother and his son and a few friends went on retreat to prepare to be received into the church. And while they were there, they engaged in what we would call today Socratic conversations. And at least some of them were written down. And it turns out that the content of those those dialogues, those conversations, was Augustine and his family and friends working out this deep integrity between the liberal arts and the Catholic faith. Wow. So it's just beautiful to see, because our earliest kind of robust attempt to bring together liberal education and the Catholic faith came from those very dialogues that they had as Augustine was being received into the church.
That is a wonderful example to bring to mind. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lehman. I'm getting the look from Dave. quickly, is there where would you direct members of our audience who want to learn more about liberal education or classical education? Is there a resource that you would recommend as a first go?
You know, there is. The University of Dallas has taken on the Arts of Liberty Project among its various initiatives, and it's a website. It's part of the overall website of the University of Dallas, so just Arts of Liberty at UDallas. .edu, I believe, is the address. But it has a whole host of different kinds of materials, and everything up there is free. There are study guides for different books. There are timelines, images, all kinds of things that can help you get your feet wet and get your basic orientation in that tradition.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Lehman. Thanks for all the work you are doing in the field of liberal education, the work you did on developing the Arts of Liberty website that you just referenced. It's really a tremendous resource, and we're so grateful to have had you on the show.
Certainly. Thank you very much for the invitation.
All right. Very good. Yeah, you were getting a little bit of a look there, but that was good. It was a very interesting conversation. Thank you very much, Dr. Jeffrey Lehman, Professor of Humanities and Graduate Director of Classical Education. And also thank you, Dr. Sanford. Congratulations again. That's the exciting news. Again, as of July 1st, Dr. Sanford will be the president of the University of Dallas. And we also appreciate them as sponsors. It's been great working with Claire Venegas, who has been my contact with the university.
She's outstanding.
Yeah, and got out of California, came to Texas. She loves it here. And so I think she's listening today. So thanks, Claire, for your work at the University of Dallas. And you can go to udallas.edu to learn more about the many good things going on at the University of Dallas. So great seeing you. Congratulations again. And we'll see you next month, right?
That's right. Thank you, Dave.